Fight Night Picks Recap Show. I'm John Franklin. This week on the show, we discuss all the fights from the UFC Fight Night. Whitaker versus Till. Let's bring in to start this discussion our man Cam. Cameron Romanek. All right, Cameron, let's talk about this card. Listen, we don't lie to each other. This is how we build trust. I watched it, and that was it. I didn't really analyze it. I just wasn't excited for it. Well, apparently, I'm either a complete fraud or Dana did well at the tables and wanted to spread it around because there were 6 performance bonuses on the night, which we'll get to later. So this card had more performance bonuses than any of the other Fight Island cards. So let's start with the obvious question, which is, do you think it was better than the other cards? Do you think it was just the last one? So the UFC has a performance bonus account, and they were like, we have a surplus. What are your thoughts overall about just this card?
I don't think it was the best Fight Island card. I'll just start by saying that. I think it was pretty entertaining, but with 15 fights, it's a really long card. And people can get really burnt out by the end. I mean, I started to get burnt out watching Shogun and Lil Nog go at it. I was kind of feeling a little like, I don't know, MMA, getting tired of it a little bit. I mean, I'll never get tired of MMA, but sometimes it's just too much for one day. And it was entertaining. I think the only reason there were 6 fight bonuses is because there were so many fights. I mean, it's like 3 or 4 more than your average card. It was a lot. I think there were the other Fight Island cards probably deserved bonuses more than a few of these guys. And I mean, we'll get into the bonuses later, but.
Right. Which made it interesting. Cause I remember there was a couple guys in the first Fight Island card. I remember feeling like they were getting snubbed, and then you see 6 thrown out. And I mean, I get that you can't sort of go back if you're Dane and say, hey, sorry, I know you fought better than this guy, but we're only giving out so many that night. Yeah. But still, it seemed a little bit off. All right, Cameron, let's start with the big one. It was former middleweight champion took on former Mike Perry BFF as Robert Whittaker and Darren Till hooked him up. Tell me what you saw on this one. It was Whittaker with the unanimous decision. Till had his moments, but obviously not enough. What'd you see?
I thought it was just a battle of two guys waiting to counter each other. One was going to step in and catch the other. That's what happened in the first round. That's what happened in the second round for either guy. Till dropped Whittaker with an elbow as Whittaker came in. And then I think Whittaker dropped Till with an overhand right in the second as Till came in. And then from then on, they kind of just stood flat-footed and stared at each other. I think Till landed a lot of power shots, and Rob just stayed active. He was beating up that leg pretty badly. I think Till said he said his right knee was completely blown out, and he expects surgery is going to be necessary. So that kind of makes sense why he wasn't bouncing as much as he was in those first 2 rounds. He kind of slowed down his pace quite a bit. And Rob just kept chipping away. I think that's how he got the decision, just staying active.
All right. Let's talk about Darren Till, because here's my problem with Darren Till. And I will completely concede that if he hurt his leg, then that might have accounted for some of the output, might have accounted for some of the pace. But what I'm noticing is there's a larger problem. You know, some people are passively aggressive. I feel like Darren Till's aggressively passive. I see him coming forward. I see the feints, but it just doesn't bear itself out in the end with fight volume. Like, if you look back at his, if you go to Fight Metric and just click on Darren Till, where they show all of the fights, there's not as much volume as I would want to think that I would see from someone that's, you know, calls himself the gorilla, is always coming forward. So I guess my question to you is, is this kid more show than go? And what do I make of him?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of times you'll see Till land a good combination and he doesn't follow it up. He kind of lands good shots, gets out of there. I think he has potential to keep pressing forward and throw more. I think that would benefit him greatly. I just think he might be a little spooked after being dropped by Woodley and finished there and then being knocked out cold by Masvidal. Ever since then, he's kind of just been, like, very timid, very scared of these big punchers. I mean, he faced Gastelum and Whittaker, who are 2 of the heavier hitters at 185. It may be a little bit of too much talk and not enough action from Till. It seems like he talks a big game on social media, and he doesn't really back it up with the way he says he fights. He doesn't fight like he says he does.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the bigger issue, is that he doesn't have to fight any particular way, but it seems like it doesn't his fighting is off brand to his talking. And so he's still an interesting guy. I was texting with Craig. I think he could be that Jorge Masvidal type that he kind of hangs around and then becomes a huge star, you know? So just because of the way that he is, and there's sort of some indicators there.
Thanks for having me as a part of the show at Craig Allen FNP. And listen, I'm really looking forward to this. We've got a great partnership that we've struck with Ringside Beer, some awesome merch over on their site. They've got some really cool tap handles. I got the MMA glove tap handle. I got the boxing glove tap handle for their lagers. And listen, I couldn't believe that this was the introductory offer that they have to just our viewers with Fight Night Picks. But if you use the promo code FNP at checkout, ringsidebeerstore.com, you get 25% off your order. They've got some awesome merch over there. They want you to get in the ring with Ringside Beer. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff with those guys, so make sure you check them out, ringsidebeerstore.com. And as always, like we like to say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it.
All right, so let's get to Robert Whittaker, the former champ. I'll keep this question real easy. He says he's back. Do you believe him?
No. I don't think he looked good at all last night. I don't think he was – they both looked really bad. I'll just say that. They both looked bad. I think Rob would find – he'd have a lot of trouble if he fought Izzy again, and he'd have even more trouble if he fought Cannonier. I think the top of 185 is Cannonier right now. Cannonier and Costa are the two challengers that I think could give Izzy a challenge. Anyone else, I just don't see it playing out well for him. And for Rob, I mean, if he fights Hermanson, I think he could actually have some success against Hermanson if that's his next fight. And depending on how long he sits out again, if he feels burnt out or who knows. I mean, I'd love to see Rob get back in there and be the Rob of old, but he hasn't. He didn't look it last night.
There's something interesting, and I want to talk about the 185-pound division here in a second, just as a whole. But there's something about these champions that, you know, when a guy like Anderson Silva rattles off that many defenses, or St. Pierre or whatever, you know, it's really difficult to stay at the top of these divisions for a long time. And it's really difficult to stay, you know. The thing about other sports is the NFL, and Chael Sonnen said something once I thought was interesting. He goes, you know, the thing I admire about football players and basketball players and whoever is that, you know, if Tom Brady says I'm the baddest quarterback on the planet, he has to show up wherever they tell him to show up and prove it. He doesn't get to turn down a fight. He doesn't get to do this or that. So, you know, because Chael can be critical of fighters sometimes. I think that, you know, let's talk about the division and maybe that my issue with that kind of stuff will bear itself out. But I'm concerned about this 185-pound division. They could put on some snoozers here and there. Maybe Anderson made us think this was a Cadillac division. Really, it isn't. You know, obviously, Romero and Adesanya was not that great, but, you know, Gastelum and Adesanya was. You don't never really know what you're getting with some of these 185-pound fights. Am I being too hard on the middleweight division, or do they need to step it up?
I don't think so.
I think after every ranked middleweight fight, you're seeing it's getting more and more top-heavy. Guys like Gastelum, who we thought was at the top, is looking worse and worse. Whittaker is the number one contender, but doesn't look like it. Shabazian and Brunson, that's coming up soon. That'll be another telling fight to see who can keep climbing. But other than that, top three and then Shabazian, it's not the strongest division. It's there aren't a lot of challengers that I could see in 2 years' time, 3 years' time, or champions even.
I think sometimes if we got these fighters who are like, you know, I'm never someone that says we're going to do trilogies no matter what. I don't think Dana should do that either. But like, you know, Costa and Adesanya, I got to see if Adesanya comes out and knocks Costa out dead in the first round or vice versa, I got to see more than just one fight between those two guys. I mean, I got to, you know, when heavyweight was thin, we got Kane and JDS multiple times, even though, you know, they were one side and here and there. Obviously the next thing for Darren Till is the doctor's office. What about Whittaker? Do you see him turn? Whittaker's this guy who kind of like, I understand why he gets burnt out, cause he like really leaves it all out there and he'll be injured and he'll have a lot of time away. What do you want to see from him?
I think he'll fight Hermanson, and I think it'll get booked quite soon. He didn't take a lot of damage in that fight last night, and Hermanson obviously got a heel hook in a couple seconds. So I think that fight should get booked. I'm not sure Hermanson deserves it, but as long as Cannonier isn't healthy, I think that fight needs to get booked between the two of them to decide the next title challenger, or the winner of that faces Cannonier, because Cannonier's right there, and Cannonier knocked out Hermanson. Cannonier should be next in line after Costa, but I do think the UFC is going to try and give him one more fight after he comes back from the pectoral tear, I think it was.
All right, let's move on, Cam. It's in a slightly less important trilogy than DC Stipe 3. Shogun, Hua, and Rogerio Nogueira did it one more again. Shogun won a split decision, and with that, we say goodbye to Little Nog. No one really wanted this fight, Cam, but I thought these guys represented themselves well, considering the circumstances. You could make an argument it was better than some other fights we saw at the top of that main card. What'd you see in this one?
Well, like DC said, it can't be a trilogy if the other guy beat you twice. So I think this was just like a real sad fight. I think it had a lot more potential to be sad if someone got knocked out. But it was fun while it lasted. It was, they were swanging and banging. They were throwing hands, but it was fun. I mean, I enjoyed it. I didn't get too depressed from Lil Nog leaving. I think it was a nice send off for him. He didn't look terrible. Neither of them looked bad. I don't know what's next for Shogun. I feel like he should retire too, but who knows?
You know, it's interesting you said that because, first off, let me just say this. If anyone is in a retirement fight, guys, this is the way it goes. Let me just give you the blueprint here so I can save you some trouble. You go as long as you can go. Hopefully it's the distance. You get in there, you swing it out. Let the guy whose last fight it is take some swings for the fences. No late takedowns. Don't do any of that. And at the end, you raise each other's hands. You get the iconic photo that the guy can hang up in his house. Like, this is simple stuff. So anyway, let's get back to Shogun. So listen, I'm going to be completely transparent here in the sense that it's between him and GSP as my all-time favorite fighters. Those are my guys. Those guys I like to watch the most. To this point, I went to cover a World Series of Fighting event once, and it said in the biggest letters you could imagine on my credential, no taking pictures with fighters. And I saw Shogun there. He was cornering somebody. And I said, this is the guy to lose your credential for. So if I'm going to lose my credential, it's going to be with Shogun. So I went and took a picture with him. Anyway, my thing with Shogun is this. Whenever people talk to me about who should stop fighting, I always say Shogun's the guy. I never worry about his safety. He's such a warrior. I never go, man, he's taking too many shots. Shogun's made a living taking shots. And I always felt like he could intelligently defend himself. I don't worry about him, if that makes sense, going into a cage. Until last night. I did not feel like he was the Shogun I'm used to seeing. He looked a little thick around the waist. This seemed like the fight. And he's looked worse in other fights. Let me just say that, in terms of his output and all that. I just felt like it was over for him tonight. And part of it was, if you're fighting a 44-year-old guy, who it's his last fight, and he's that effective, I mean, I feel less concern over Paul Craig doing stuff to him or when he fought Shale. Do you know what I'm saying? Even though I don't think these guys were at the top of the food chain when they fought Shogun, at least I felt like they were game fighters. Rogerio is washed, and for him to do as well as he did against Shogun is a problem. You said you don't really know what you want for Shogun moving forward. Let's say I have to pin you down to somebody. I don't need a name. Top 10, top 15, top 20, put somebody over.
Top 25? I don't know.
Yeah. He's not the guy for Prochka, obviously.
You look through a list of names and they get pretty scary for him. What can happen?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say like Ryan Spann, but that he would probably knock him out. I don't know. It's there are a lot of names that I think would finish Shogun in that top 20, top 25.
That's the thing. I think he's at the point now where he's you know, if we're going to borrow a page or a term from pro wrestling, it's time for him to start putting guys over. He goes in there with Ryan Spann and is a name on his, you know, his resume. And you know what I'm saying? He builds people. So I think that's where he's at. Let's talk about Lil Nog for a second. This is going to sound like a horrible question. I don't mean it to. Is there anything more to his legacy than being Big Nog's brother? Like, when you think of him, is that his ultimate legacy? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it's tough, right?
I don't know what else I could say. I mean, yeah, that's what it is.
I mean, he's, in my opinion, there's all these fighters, not all, there's a few fighters who are twins or brothers, and I think that he represented the second half of the brotherhood, if you will, well enough. You know, he's better than Ninja Hua, he's better than Mark Hughes, all these guys that have fought, he's better than Dan Lozon, he's better than that type of shit. So I think that's kind of his legacy, is that he represented his family well and was like, oh yeah, Big Nog's brother used to fight. Yeah, he's pretty good. But he doesn't have an individual legacy, if that makes sense. Cam, former UFC heavyweight champion Fabricio Werdum, went one-on-one with the former people's champ of the light heavyweight division, Alexander Gustafsson. Gus looked good. Gus looked like himself on the feet, but Werdum took him to the deep end and drowned his ass, getting an armbar submission early in the first round. Was there enough tape here to even have an opinion about Gustafsson as a heavyweight, or was it just like, listen, you tried to get up and run away from Werdum, he dragged you down, and it was a wrap?
Yeah, I mean, I
saw this fight ending one of two ways, either like that or Gus knocking him out. I think there were only two outcomes there. I think after seeing Gus fight Anthony Smith and get submitted, I think it became knowing you can get submitted by Anthony Smith off one takedown, like, just imagine what Fabricio Werdum can do to you.
Yeah.
Up a weight class. I mean, he just did the one thing you can't do against Fabricio Werdum, and that's turn your back to him.
And the thing I respect about what Fabricio did was he just had the patience. You know, he was going after the arm. Gus had it well defended. And instead of just saying, all right, I'm gonna reposition, I'm going to try and get something better, I'm going to give up on this, he just kind of hung out there for a second and said, all right, I'll wait you out. This is my world. I'm used to being here. I'll wait you out. We'll see what happens. And it worked.
That was a really slick transition from the going from the rear naked choke to the arm bar. That was really nice.
Okay, well, this is the last fight on Werdum's contract. The joke on Twitter was that Fabricio had 4 missed calls from Scott Coker before Joe Martinez read the result. Is that what's next for this guy? Now, listen, I'm an old head, but you don't have to be that much of an old head to remember that before Stipe fought Werdum for the belt, they were saying Werdum was the greatest heavyweight of all time because he'd beaten
–
What's that?
Yeah, I was saying that.
Yeah, he beat Emelianenko. I mean, he had the resume. So, should he go to Bellator, maybe take on Ryan Bader? Should he be this guy that just goes to, like, Submission Underground and sort of rules that world? What do you think's next?
If he wants to keep fighting,
I think Bellator would be the best promotion for him. But that's all up to him. I mean, if Bellator wants him, I mean, that would make some good fights. I mean, I think 2020 Bellator can't compete in the UFC heavyweight division. Obviously, he just did, but against a former light heavyweight. So I think Bellator, he'd actually be able to maybe get some more wins. I think if he stayed in the UFC and fought a ranked heavyweight, he'd lose quite soundly.
Yeah, I think where it gets interesting is because he was mentioning Fedor's name again, and he has the win over Fedor. So here's where I think it sets him up to get paid, is that he's got the win over Fedor. If he fights him again, that could make money. And when I say make money, I mean Bellator money, not UFC money.
Yeah.
So that could make money. And then if Fedor wins, now they got the true trilogy fight. So I know that we have these things where guys kind of string it along. I feel a little bit better about Werdum fighting Fedor than I felt about Royce Gracie fighting Ken Shamrock. So I don't know. Do you think Fedor's a guy that he should be, you know, texting or what?
That could be fun.
I mean, I'm not totally opposed to that. I wouldn't mind him facing Fedor. I think that's probably the biggest fight he could do now that he's gone from the UFC. So I mean, we'll see what the future holds for Werdum. But I'm optimistic he'll fight again. I think I'd like to see him fight some more. I think he's always a fun guy when he gets in there.
I want to get your opinion on something because there's a couple of schools of thought. Do you think there's a certain age when fighters are just done? Or, and they should not be in a sanctioned bout? Or do you think guys should fight as long as they want to fight, as long as they're fighting someone of commensurate skills? Meaning, if you're, you know, and I'll put this into terms for like common people, just everyday terms. If my uncle wants to get in a fight at the barbecue, it's fine, but he better fight another, you know, 58-year-old. So is it cool as long as these guys are matched up together? Is it cool if we put Verdum in there? Meaning, is it better we put Verdum in there with Fader than Bader?
Yeah, probably.
I think that makes sense. That definitely makes more sense than continuing fighting into your mid-40s and fighting top-tier guys in their late 20s, early 30s.
Well, we talked about this with other fighters. Paige Van Zandt, who's not an old fighter, but we talked about when your name is bigger than your game, you're going to get set out there to build somebody else up, right? It happened to BJ Penn. It happens to everybody. And I think you have to be smart enough to say, no, I should be fighting other 40-year-olds. If I'm going to do this, yeah, I should be fighting, which is kind of like what I respect about like Enzo or, you know, some of these guys that take the right fights, you know? Yeah. All right, let's talk Gus. Can he succeed in this division, or is the jury still out?
I think he should go back to light heavyweight. If he's going to keep fighting, I think light heavyweight is where it's at for him. I'm not sure he carries the power up to heavyweight. I'm not sure, like, some of these faster heavyweights would give him some issues, especially on the feet and clearly on the ground.
If you're the UFC, is it too much to resist running Gus out there one more time with somebody like Greg Hardy, where it's just Gus's name is so huge?
Yeah.
And even though he lost his last fight, if you're them, can you resist that? I mean, when I said that, did your stomach turn, or did you say it makes sense for the promotion, or it makes sense for Hardy? And how do you feel about it from all angles?
I'm not sure.
I think that would I don't know. Hardy did just fight Volkov, now that I'm thinking about it, and that was a massive step up. And I think Hardy might be rumored to be booked against Khalil Roundtree. I'm not sure if that's true or not. But if he's not, then I mean, Gus could be a fun fight for him. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like UFC might be going back to doing a slow build for Hardy than jumping up. They gave him the one fight with Volkov, but I think that's kind of to test the waters. And now they're going to build him back up with some more lower-ranked guys. So, yeah, I'm not sure what's – there are a lot of options for him at both divisions, but it just depends on if he thinks he can keep the weight like solidly on. Because he looked a little thick at weigh-ins and during the fight on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to former champion, strawweight champion Carla Esparza. She drew Marina Rodriguez last night. The fight went the distance, and Esparza got the split decision. The fight was a true clash of styles, with Esparza controlling the level and Rodriguez more effective in the stand-up. How'd you score this one, and what'd you see?
I had this one,
I think 30-27 Esparza. I thought Esparza controlled all of the rounds. She got it to the ground. She didn't make a lot of guard passes or transitions, but she did land the shots when she needed to and just kind of controlled the fight. And then towards the end of the round, she would go for a leg lock or a heel hook and just get beat up and cut up. And that was last like 30 seconds of each round. So I think she like might have thrown some rounds away, but I think the takedowns are what really got it for her. That's kind of her game plan nowadays is just lay and pray, really.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about that because she didn't seem to want a damn thing to do with the knuckle game. And, you know, she's taken some beatings in her damn. When she won the belt, I was very excited because I remember kind of what she'd done in Invicta, and I was excited to have her over. And then Joanna came out and just blasted her. And it was one of those fights where you were like, man, I feel bad for this girl. So do you think that her lack of willingness to engage says more about the respect that she had for Rodriguez? Or do you think it says more for her perception of her own striking?
I think it's a combination
of both. I think she respects the fact that Rodriguez has legit hands. And I think Esparza definitely knows that, and Esparza definitely knows where her limits are striking-wise. Her arms are so much shorter, she just couldn't get inside and actually put together any strikes on the feet without getting tagged. So I think she probably game-planned that and knew that. And like a person like that, who if Rodriguez could defend a takedown, that could be like the Joanna fight all over again. And I think she's aware of that, and I think she committed hard to the wrestling and did what she needed to do to get the win.
You know, for someone with Esparza's build, I mean, there is a path for her being a good striker, but it's like, you know, it's kind of like Frankie Edgar in lightweight. Like, you got to find a way to work your way in. You have to extend yourself. It's a lot of combinations. You have to know that, like, you got to make choices, you know. One of the things that I think I like the best, Chael does this, Couture does this, or did this, which is, you know, sort of using your head movement to be, in a way, feinting takedowns and then hitting strikes off your head movement. You know, you're moving your head a certain way, striking, if your head's going left, you're hit with the right hand, vice versa. She could do that, but at this point, it's, you know, you're rebuilding a car. You're trying to turn a Camaro into a Lamborghini. So let's talk about what's next. We talked about this fight already, but last night I heard Joanna's name mentioned for Esparza, and anyone who suggested that fight must not have seen the first one. Do you think that, and this is another thing we're talking about as fighters get older. I'm going to ask you a weird question here in the sense that, do you think that Joanna's regressed enough and Esparza's either gained or stayed the same enough that it's a closer fight this time? Or do you think the styles are just, she needs to avoid Joanna altogether?
No, she should avoid
Joanna altogether. I mean, I'd go as far, if Esparza's fighting up in the rankings, I'd go as far to guarantee she loses her next fight. If she fights up in the rankings, she'd be fighting, I think Rose is the next title shot. So she'd either be fighting Andrade, Joanna, or Suarez. And I don't see her having any chance against any three of those girls.
The Suarez fight would be fun, though, but I still think Suarez...
It would be fun, but...
I think Suarez is just too big. I mean, right. Esparza could drop down to atom weight. To make 105, I think Suarez would have to cut off a leg.
Yeah. All right, so, and we're just kind of going to wait on Rodriguez, you think? I mean, it's the first loss, isn't it?
I think it's just back. Yeah, it's back down the ladder for her, but I think she has a bright future.
All right, let's talk about Paul Craig. You know, last night when I was looking at this fight, I had ultimate faith that I would be able to pronounce his opponent's name. So let's see, Cam. I'm going to go with Gadzimurad Antigulov. Not too bad. I think I'm good. I think I got the last name right.
I think it's Gadzimurad Antigulov. I don't know if that's the last name, but I think that's how it's pronounced.
All right.
Well, I'm not 100%, but I think that's how it's pronounced.
So I can't figure Paul Craig out. Some nights I think he's skilled enough to crack the top 15, but then I look at the resume and I remember, okay, he lost to Tyson Pedro. He lost to Khalil Roundtree. He lost to Jimmy Crute. He lost to Alonzo Menifield. Not a pushover in that group, but losing to those guys certainly doesn't make you a top 10 fighter. Right, it keeps you between 15, 20, maybe 25. So who is Paul Craig? Is he the guy who fought last night, or is he the guy that lost all those fighters? Like, who is this guy?
I think Paul Craig is kind of
just style. He benefits and pays for some of the matchups. I think if he gets a matchup with a wrestler, he's going to take him down. He's going to welcome it and try and submit them off his back. That's clearly what he did last night. And if he fights a striker who's going to try and keep it standing, he might run into some trouble. I think it's kind of like styles, whatever style he's fighting makes the fight for him. I don't even know what's next for him. It's kind of like, he's kind of one of those guys who could bounce around and really, really be booked with anyone and make it a fun fight. I don't know. It's hard to judge Paul Craig off his resume. It's really difficult.
He seems like one of these guys, you see these certain guys in sports and they do their, their best, and they you know, they're guys who contribute to their teams that they're on. I look at a guy like Richard Jefferson, right? And if we're comparing people, I don't know Paul Craig would be on Richard Jefferson's level. But Richard Jefferson had a career that ultimately made him an amazing analyst because he played with a lot of high-profile players. He was a starter. He was a bench player. He just did a lot of things that would deem that he would be. Sometimes I see a guy like Paul Craig and I go, this guy's just going to, like, be a great announcer someday. Or so. You know what I mean? Like, he's has a career that he's building. So, again, I don't ever see, like, a title run in him. He could surprise me because some of the fights – and listen, I'm not trying to turn everybody to the next Jorge Masvidal. But there are certain guys that sort of exist under the radar, I don't think. Craig has fun. He enjoys himself. I mean, last night they took the headset off in the post-fight interview and the dude did the snake. So I'm like, he has fun. He enjoys himself. So I don't know that he's quite got that X factor like Jorge does, but he's a good enough fighter that if he could hang around, he could surprise you maybe. All right, let's move on to the Brazilian Cowboy. He defeated Peter Sobota, 3 rounds, unanimous decision. I don't have a lot here. What do you have?
No, not much.
I think it was I think Sabata's path to victory is probably on the ground. And he didn't get it there, and Oliveira looked great. I mean, he looked really good. He looked like he wasn't totally washed like I thought he was. He was putting together kicks, putting together combos, just doing classic cowboy stuff.
Fight Night Picks is brought to you by Vertiball. Head on over to their website. It's vertiball.com. And listen, it's an awesome product. It's a local company out of New Brunswick, Canada. So make sure you support those guys locally as well as Fight Night Picks. But they're the only mountable portable muscle massager. They can stick on any smooth surface. They've got an industrial strength suction cup. Can support over 100 pounds of pressure. You can get really into those deep knots. I have one here at home. I use it for my back and my shoulders from holding up that Fight Night Picks Pick'em trophy. But listen, make sure you check them out. It's a great product. Like I said, they're recommended by physiotherapists, masseuses, and chiropractors across Canada, the US, UK, and Australia. And they're used by countless professional athletes like Minka Fitzpatrick on screen there, as well as Clelin Ferrell of the Raiders. So if you head into the cart, make sure you check them out. So I've got a Vertiball massager in my cart right there. Use the promo code FNP. You're going to save 10% off your order. You're supporting this company here that I'm very passionate about in New Brunswick, Canada. And you're helping out us as well. So make sure you check them out. Vertiball.com. Promo code FNP. 10% off your order. And without further ado, let's get into it.
All right. So let's move it forward because, I mean, Cam, let's just give the people what they want. We know what they want to talk about. They want to talk about Khamzat Chimaev against Rhys McKee. I'll let you talk about the fight, but we got to get to what's moving forward with this guy because we're getting a little bit crazy with what we think he should be doing next. On Twitter, the announcers got a little nuts last night. So talk about him just stylistically in the performance, and then we'll talk about what's next.
This was just – I mean, it's pure domination again. I think it was like – I don't know how many strikes. It was similar to the last fight where it was like 75-0 on the strikes and finished it by TKO. I think he's just like the 170-pound Habib. I mean, I don't want to go that far and say he's going to be like 27-28-0 champion, like unbeatable. But he looked really, really, really good. I mean, all his transitions, all his top control, everything he does is just like picture perfect in that fight. And as for who he's calling out, I mean, he called out Mike Perry. He called out Damian Maia on Twitter. He's saying he's going to be the 170-pound and 185-pound champion. I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy. And we were just talking about it on the other recap where he fought. And, I'd like to see – I'm really excited for what's next for him. I think there are a lot of fun matchups for him. And – yeah, I just really want to see how far I can go.
Well, listen. All right. Let's get into this guy for real because when welterweights look under their beds, Cam, they see Khamzat Chimaev. You know, this kid is a monster. He isn't just beating guys. He's dominating them. He's fought twice in the last 10 days. I think he maybe caught 2 strikes in those fights. In these 2 fights he's had, maybe he's been hit twice. Let's put that in perspective. His opponents have 4 combined hands and 4 combined legs. And with those 8 appendages, They can only manage two strikes. Just wrap your head around that for a second. They got more appendages than strikes by a significant. Yeah. So, again, you talked about it. He says he wants to smash everyone. No less of an MMA authority than Dan Hardy had Usman's name out there. I mean, that's getting way ahead of things. But let me ask you a question. And I really want you to think about this. Why not fast track this kid? Like, seriously, what's the harm in it? Why not give him a fight that we – here's the last time I really remember someone getting this crazy about a fighter. When Uriah Hall was on Tough, and he hadn't yet lost to Kelvin Gastelum, and each week we're watching Tough, people were saying, can Uriah Hall beat Anderson Silva? And it's like, dude, this guy's on Tough. And listen, I was doing podcasts back then. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I didn't say that. I didn't know what to do with this guy. He seemed like he had all the tools. So, I mean, it's looking like most people are leaning Damian Maia. Mike Perry might be fun just because Mike Perry's Mike Perry. And watching Mike Perry get dominated in that way would just be interesting to see how Mike Perry reacted to it, what his post-fight interview was. So there's a lot of things that come with the Mike Perry fight. I'm gonna do a little bit of a thought exercise with you. I'm going to give you the top 15, all right? And someone did this on Twitter, so I won't act like I just invented it. But let's talk about who you would feel like he would be a favorite against or who you think he'd give trouble to, all right? Here's the top 15 at welterweight. Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, it would.
He would. I think it would beat Anthony Pettis.
Neil Magny.
Oh.
I'd have to see a little more, but I would lean towards Chimaev. I have to see Chimaev's game on the feet first.
Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, he would be Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
Vicente Luque. That's an interesting
one. Oh, that's very interesting because Luque's big. I'd have to see more. I'm not sure. I'm on the fence about that one.
We'll skip Nate Diaz because we'll just skip Nate Diaz. Jeff Neal.
I think Neal is
booked against Magny, so I think I'd have to see how that fight goes first.
RDA.
Yeah, he beat RDA.
Say it again.
I think
he would beat RDA. I think he has the game plan to beat RDA.
Chiesa.
Oh, yeah.
He would beat him.
And then Damian Maia.
The worry I have with Maia is Maia so crafty that, and Chimaev loves going to the ground so much, it's kind of on the fence. But I mean, you try choking out a Eastern European guy, you're gonna have some trouble.
And then we got Stephen Thompson, Tyrone Woodley, Jorge Masvidal. I'm not ready for him to go against those guys yet. Yeah. Although he might have some success. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think he might be Colby just because of the size discrepancy. I'm not sure about Woodley if going in with that game plan to try and take Woodley to the ground. Woodley's pretty big. And Wonderboy, I think Wonderboy's defensive wrestling isn't good enough. I think he would be able to get Wonderboy down.
I think that the name that's hanging out there is Robbie Lawler. Because he has a name. But I think the fights for me are Chiesa or Maia. Because if he loses, he'll get caught. You don't want a guy like this get knocked out. You don't want the boogeyman getting knocked out. The boogeyman can get caught. The boogeyman don't get knocked out. That's why they had Brock Lesnar fight Frank Mir. Because if anything was going to happen, he was going to get caught, which happened in the first fight. He got caught. And then Brock can still seem like this just guy who's this wrecking ball, but just doesn't know jiu-jitsu. For sure. I think that's the game you want to play with him, especially since he's a grappler.
I think it depends on
how long the UFC want to try and keep building this guy and keep it going with him.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they do this because they seem to be open to letting him fight whenever he wants to fight. And in fairness to the situation, some people are saying the turnarounds are too quick. He's not taking any damage. So, I mean, what do you want from the guy? He wants to get paid. Let's get to this Trinaldo fight because it was sort of mired in controversy in the way that it ended. Herb Dean was, I don't know if he's if he takes Joe Rogan's on it or Alpha Brain, he wasn't taking it last night. That was just a weird way for the fight to end. Paul Felder lost his mind over it, which I can understand. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I think that was. I think Herb had a couple bad ones on this card. And I think Hardy was pretty upset too about it. I think both the announcers there were not happy with.
Oh, they're a meme now. Hardy and Herb.
Yeah. The picture of him. The picture of Hardy leaning over to talk to him. But Felder in the post fight show went on a little rant as well, and I think it deserved. I think that he was out cold. I mean, there's no other way to put it. When a guy is in that position, you let him sit there for what, like 5 seconds and eat a few more shots. It's pretty ridiculous. I think it was a really bad stoppage.
Well, let's put it this way. Let's spin it forward because, you know, Herb Dean at times has been called the greatest referee in MMA. Now, I think Dana White was doing that. And I think a little bit of it was because he was trying to shove it up John McCarthy's ass when McCarthy had moved on. But my point is this: he was a good referee for a while, and still may be. How do we make it so that there's some sort of, I guess, punitive would be the way to look at it. What can be done for a guy that puts a fighter in danger in that way, and still allows him to be a referee? We have to acknowledge at least, right? So I mean, should there be fines? Should there be, you know, if you have a bad stoppage, you can't work a main event for five. Car, you know what I'm saying? What do you think?
Yeah, I think commission should be able to step in and issue out fines or suspensions and whatnot. If the commission goes back and decides that it was a bad stoppage, it put a fighter in danger. I don't think early stoppages would be much of an issue, but I think late stoppages should be result in either fines or suspensions. I think it's pretty serious with the amount of damage these guys take before referees step in. I think it's pretty bad.
All right, let's move on to Jesse Ronson, Nicholas Dalby. Ronson was victorious via rear naked choke in the very first round. What'd you see here?
I was a little surprised by this one. Dalby obviously got dropped. I thought Dalby would be able to control it on the feet. He looked a lot better on the feet and then got hit with the one shot, and Ronson went for the sub. I'm pretty disappointed because I like Dalby a lot, and I think he has potential, but it's back down for him, and we'll see what's next.
The commentary team's talking, as we move on to the next one, Tom Aspinall and Jake Collier. Aspinall gets the win there by a TKO in the first round. They're talking big things for this guy. Like they see him in the top 10 of the heavyweight division. Do you think, and we're going to get on to another one here in a second. If it's the next fight, we'll just kind of combine them. No, it's not. There are these guys who are kind of like prelim heroes. You know, they always look good in the prelims, but they don't have that it factor, or they don't have the skills to push into the top 10. What do you think about our boy here? Do you think he's got it? Or do you think that the UFC is just, and the commentators are jumping the gun a little bit?
I think he has a ton of potential. I think Gooden and Hardy are a little biased because, I mean, they had a little bias with some British fighters throughout the card. But I do see a lot of potential with Aspinall. I mean, his boxing looked really fast and really powerful. I mean, he's a Tyson Fury sparring partner, and he also has like a jiu-jitsu background. He has strong wrestling. I think he has the whole game for heavyweights, and he's fast. He makes me think of like I don't want to take away credit from Tanner Boser, but I feel like he's a faster Tanner Boser. And I think that's super exciting for the division.
And that's the guy I was going to get to. So we'll skip a fight and come back to it. So let's talk about Tanner Boser. Because this is my concern, is that he's one of these guys on the prelims that, you know, is kind of like a people's champ. People like watching him. You know, I want Tanner Boser to be successful because I kind of coined him Keto Roy Nelson, and I'd like to get some traction behind that. But he seems like, you know, he's cracking monster cans with his mouth, and he seems like he's that kind of a guy who could be marketable unless he starts, unless he does what Roy Nelson does, which he starts to believe his own hype. And, you know, he's cool when he's one of those guys that when he's being himself, he's cool. But when he feels like he has to be cool, it doesn't really work. Roy Nelson, I mean. How much potential do you see in Tanner Boser? Do you see a guy that is going to ever crack the top 15 or top 10? Or do you see a guy who just is fun, goes in there swinging, the fans will love him, but that's where it ends?
I think he's going to be like a fun guy that the fans love and always puts on a good fight. And I think he could make he could crack a top 15, I think. I'm not sure how much higher than the 10 to 15 range, but I do see him being able to get there. I mean, he fought Ciryl Gane to a decision. Although he did lose it, he survived Ciryl Gane, which is kind of impressive in retrospect.
You know, the interesting thing about him is there are certain fighters, a lot of fighters, but guys like that, mm-hmm. who they do things a certain way, and that makes them successful. And then people start coming into their lives going, if only he did this, if only he, you know, went and trained with John Danaher, if only he went to Jackson Wink, or put Firas Sahabi in his life, and things will change. And realistically, all that stuff does is it just clouds the mind. The guy ceases to become who he was. Very rarely does that ever work, where it's just like, the only thing missing from this guy's life is Jackson Wink. And he goes to Jackson Wink, and then he, you know, comes to fruition. I'm with you. I think that we should just enjoy Tanner Boser for what he is. And if that happens to evolve, you know what? I'll give you an example. Mark Hunt is a guy who just was what he was, but he started to go on a run where it's like, you know, we're looking at a title shot here. Yeah. And it was just a byproduct of him being himself and walking off guys and all that.
That's kind of what I could see for Boser. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right, let's talk about Mosvar. Evloev defeating Mike Grundy by unanimous decision. Couple 30-27, 29-28. What do you got here?
Yeah, I thought Evloev looked really, really good. I mean, he put it together on the feet, and then when he got taken down, he found the way to get back up. I mean, some of those transitions were incredible, like that escape from the Darce choke, and some of the ways he was able to reverse positions was really, really impressive. I'm really high on Evloev, and I think he has a very high ceiling at featherweight.
All right, Panik Khanzad defeated Betch Kahaya by unanimous decision, couple 30-27s, 29-28. Betch Kahaya has always sort of been this, you know, weird person who's, you know, I used to say about people, this guy's smarter than you think he is, but he's dumber than he thinks he is. And that's Betch Kahaya is better than we think she is, but she's not as great as she thinks she is. And sometimes she has nights where this happens. What'd you see here?
Yeah, I'm surprised Kahaya survived that fight. I mean, she was getting tagged, and she looked wobbled, and she looked off balance every time she got hit. One of my friends told me, he said, Betch Kahaya is the closest thing the UFC has to a zombie. Because she just walked through everything and got hit hard and just kept throwing bombs. I mean, it was impressive. She was in that fight for as long as it lasted, and her face was battered up. I mean, I guess she's just like a warrior that's just going to keep going out there and fighting for the company and just taking shots.
It's interesting that, you know, of all the things that she's accomplished in terms of eating punches, she couldn't eat that one right hand from Ronda, who is by no means an accomplished, you know, it's just weird how, like, definitely sometimes not. When you're someone like Ronda and you just have the destiny sort of seemingly like it's there, you have a night like that night, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Ramazan Ameev defeated Nicholas Stoles by unanimous decision. Again, couple 30-27, 29-28. What'd you have here?
Yeah, I thought it was an impressive performance for Ameev. He got caught a few times from the kickboxer Stoles. He even got taken down. But, I mean, it was just a strong overall performance of the forward pressure in the wrestling. I don't know how much potential Ameev has or if he has much potential, but, I mean, it was an impressive fight for him for sure.
All All right, and the first fight of the night, depending on how you look at it. Last for us, first for the night, Nathaniel Wood defeated John Castaneda by unanimous decision. 30-27s all over the place. What do you have here?
Yeah, I like Wood a lot. I think this is a great performance to bounce back from the Wood from the Dodson loss. Sorry, and I think he has great potential at a advanced weight. I think he cracked the top 15, but I'm not sure how much higher. I think I was a lot higher on him before the Dodson loss, and then this one, I was hoping he'd be able to get the finish and bounce back and get back to his finishing ways. But coasting to a decision is certainly nothing to be ashamed of.
All right, let's hit the housekeeping here. Let's talk about the performances of the night. Free Super Doom got 50,000. Paul Craig got 50,000. Kamzat Shamayev got 50,000. Jesse Ronson got 50,000. Tom Aspinall got 50,000. And Tanner Bozer got 50,000. So Dana was making it rain, giving out $300,000 worth of bonuses. So it's a good night for those boys. Obviously, we talked about Herb Dean. Obviously, we talked about Felder and Hardy's criticism of Herb Dean. I want to talk real quick about I used to do this more on other recap shows, so we'll start getting into more of this. But what do you think of Felder and Gooden and Hardy as a commentating team? I liked initially when they first started working together, it was like, here's the dumb American with the two Brits, and he would get their customs wrong, and they would bust his balls. Yeah. But now I think they're really settling in, and they get along well. You can tell they spend time off camera together.
Yeah.
What do you think about him?
I really like Felder. I think Felder is my favorite color commentator the UFC has. I think Felder's really great. I think Hardy can show his bias a little bit, kind of like Rogan does or DC does. But Hardy's still great. And I think Gooden's a great play-by-play guy. I don't think he's quite nearly as good as Anik. But I think it's a great team. I think it's really fun for these longer fight night cards, the non-pay-per-view cards. I think they're a good team to have together.
What I like about them is that Gooden and Hardy do inside the octagon together.
Yeah.
So I think that Gooden gets a better perspective on fighting from breaking down film with Hardy, and then that gives them comfort level. So, you know, Gooden can call back things they talked about on the show, and Felder's just his own guy. I mean, Felder, you can plug in with anybody, and he's really good. And I think that he doesn't mind taking detours. He doesn't mind sounding silly. He can be as serious as he needs to be when he needs to be serious, and then completely off in left field as well. Kind of like DC in that way.
Yeah, and Hardy also doesn't mind taking a little step back, or Felder doesn't mind taking a little step back and letting Hardy add some flair to it and get a little excited.
Yeah, and it's funny. Felder, every once in a while, it's cool that he can get away with this. It's a very unique quality in a play-by-play guy. Mm-hmm. Felder can do like a 15-year-old's joke in the middle of the fight. Felder's the kind of guy that in the middle of the fight would say, like, that's what she said or something. Like, and he would do that. It's completely on brand for him to do it, and it's a nice little deviation that he would do something silly like that. All right, let's get the hit the end of the night stuff. Who'd you have as the star of the night?
That's tough. Huh. Probably Shamayev. I mean, I think Shamayev kind of steals the show, and he's going to. Every time he's on a card now, he's going to attract a lot of attention. So I'd have to say Shamayev.
Who's the fighter you're most excited to see next?
I mean, I don't want to say Shamayev again, so I'll pick another one. I'll say, I think Tom Aspinall. I'm very excited to see what's next for him at heavyweight.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's certain guys, and the guy's name, Lazez, I think in the last card, the guys are so, I mean, there's praise, and then there's like going out of your way to give praise. And when they talked about Lazez, when they talk about Aspinall, like these guys are making me think that there's more just based on the way the commentators are talking.
Yeah.
Who do you think overperformed?
I'd say probably Verdum. I mean, I don't know if that's overperformed because he kind of walked right into that one, I guess. So I'd probably say Ronson overperformed. I think he was really impressive against Dalby, being able to drop him and get the finish. And Trinaldo getting a finish as well was really impressive.
Who do you think underperformed, besides Herb Dean? Herb Dean aside, who underperformed?
Herb Dean aside. I think Till underperformed off just his output. I think he had a lot more, and I think Whitaker did as well. I think they both underperformed at that main event. And probably Gustafson too. I mean, I think Gus could have done a lot better in that fight.
Yeah. Stat of the night for me was Shamaya pitching a shutout. I mean, yeah. No punches thrown by his opponent. Obviously no punches landed for any thrown. So, yeah, I'm with you. As for him being a star of the night, who you're most excited to see next, it's just he's one of those guys that so outperforms expectation that you're like, I mean, I get – listen, the Usman thing's insane. But that when someone outperforms that much and you're, like, pitching shutouts against guys, it becomes this question of, okay, then what is really his level? If he's so far above the level that we believe him to be on, what is the actual level? And that gets interesting.
This is kind of like this reminds me of like a professional wrestling where like the WWE would have Brock Lesnar come in and just squash guys and just beat them in like seconds. And then when he's going to fight a bigger name, it's going to be closer and everyone's going to be like, oh my God, this guy's so good. He's actually competing with Brock Lesnar.
Right.
It's kind of going to be like this. When someone survives a round, they're going to be like, oh my God, that he has a chance.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so what else? What else are you left with this card? Someday when you're, you know, your grandson's on your knee and you're talking about Fight Island 3, son, you should have been there. You should have watched. Is it going to be that some longstanding Hall of Fame champion, Shamayev, this was when we knew that he was legit? Or what sticks out to you from this?
Things that would stand out would be this is like a stop on like Shamayev's path to the title, and this is like kind of like notable that way, or it's Verdum's last fight in the UFC, or this is like purely hypothetical, like future champion Tom Aspinall's UFC debut. I mean something like that.
You know, and it's weird because sometimes we have these nights where we celebrate certain things that we know are going to happen, and we don't get a chance to celebrate things that we don't know that are going to happen, right? Like Fabricio Werdum may not ever be in a relevant fight again in terms of – not that this was overly relevant, but you know what I'm saying? He may never be in a fight for sure in the UFC again, and, you know, it might just be Fedor from here on out or guys that – you know, I think it's like one of these things where a guy like Werdum leaves – you kind of wish beforehand the two sides would just sit down and say, listen, we both know this is it. We'll send you out in a good way. You know, if you win, we'll have put a little highlight package together. But this is it for him in the UFC, and he's going to kind of go out with an impressive victory, but not really like the fanfare. It's kind of like this is a bad comparison because he's on his way to Bellator. It's kind of like how Mike Goldberg went out. You know, like Goldberg had been there forever, and it was like just a brief mention of it when he left.
Yeah, I think if this card had been in Brazil, it would have been massive with Werdum winning and Lil Nog send off with Shogun winning. I think it would have been gigantic.
It would have been, you're right. All right, guys, there you have it. Another Fight Night Picks recap show is in the books. Be sure and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit us in the comments. Listen to us on Spotify and iTunes. If you're going to get in the comments, be nice to Cameron, all right? I can tell you, you know, I expect you guys to be mean to me, but Cameron's a good guy. I learned something new this week, Cameron. I learned that a nuffing in Australia means basically you don't know shit because someone said I'm a nuffing. So I'm like, all right, I'll take it. So there you go, I'm a nuffing. I'm gonna get a shirt made. Nuffing. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. Peace.
All right.